Fiscal reflector, as you know, will be completed on Tuesday, the 3rd of October. We will have a series of individual lectures where students could bring their friends, but no public will be allowed to these lectures for the simple reason that the majority of the public will not understand. The next series is dealing with a higher nature, more the spiritual and mental side of our work. And therefore, we want to keep the students that we have and build up from there. There are plenty of places where the public can go and get a certain amount of understanding and knowledge, but we want to go into the deeper side of it. And it takes students some time before they can grasp the very deep significance of what we are teaching. The ninth step, changing the don't-do cells into yes-do cells in the brain, relaxing the vocal organs. Remain in me and I remain in you. Just as a branch cannot bear fruit by itself without remaining on the vine, neither can you unless you remain in me. John 15:4, Moffat translation. That speaks for itself. How true it is that we live in the relative. Mostly, all the time, and because we live in the relative, we fear the relative. When we get out of the relative into reality, that is to say, we can discern what the relative is, we are no longer afraid of it. But when we are caught up in the relative, really we are afraid of it, because the fact is that we react to people and things. Jesus saw clearly, as modern physics has proved, that there is only one substance underlying all form. In other words, mind and matter, or mental and physical, are ingredients of one single system. One is the inner, the other is the outer. This is not the product of my imagination, but is the result of scientific investigation along well-known and proved lines. Jesus himself, that time, when he took Peter, James, and John up to the mountain, he was explaining to them that the veil that separated the inner from the outer was an ethereal veil that could be rent by purity and faith. And when Jesus reached that particular state of his consciousness, when he became aware of himself as one with God, recognizing the relative of what it was, he was transfigured. He prayed. But in that prayer he was transfigured, because it was a realization and recognition of his oneness. He recognized the relative of what it was. He was transfigured. His face shone like the sun. His garments became clear and bright. The Son of Man became the Son of God. In that moment, his disciples were absolutely passed into a state of sleep. They were unable to understand the completeness of that reality that he saw. They still lived in the relative. They were asleep in the relative. Caught up in it, they couldn't understand this reality that the Master was trying to show them. So he touched their eyes and opened them, so that they could see the glory of the Lord. And when they opened their eyes, they saw Moses and Elijah there in brilliant raiment, just as brilliant as the Master was, three in that brilliant raiment of reality. And when Peter asked the Master, "Who are these two men that are with us?" Jesus answered, "This is Moses and this is Elijah. They have come to show you that death is but an illusion, to show you the life that is eternal." They could not yet understand it. And Peter said, "Truly, this is the gate of heaven." Then he said to the Master, "Shall I go down and bring 1/10 for you, 1/10 for Moses, and 1/10 for Elijah?" And the Master said, "No," because he could see clearly that they did not realize yet the wholeness and the completeness of that wonderful life. That life that was eternal, the reality that exists in every human soul. We were still caught up in the relative. Then when the voice cried out from the ether, "This is the Christ that the world shall know from henceforth. The Christ that lives in every human soul shall come in to action, shall breathe forth its glory." And they were afraid. They did not understand the words because the fear still lived in the relative. And when they were afraid, the Master said, "Fear not, for here am I. I am here." And when they came down from the mountain, began to talk about the seed. And Jesus said, "Do not mention what you have seen or heard until I have returned to you. Till I have risen and returned to you, then you can talk about it." Yet even his disciples did not then know the completeness of the reality that exists. If we can discern that which is relative, we will know the relative, and when we know it, we shall not fear. And the more we understand the relative, the more we will know what reality is. Not that you will ever know what it is, but you will know that I am real. The inner and the outer are one. I must exist in the infinite, not outside. I must exist in him, neither am I created in time or out of time, because time does not exist in eternity. Therefore I am created in him. The everlasting life must be known in yourselves. I cannot show it to you, but you can find it. So Jesus clearly saw, as modern physics has proved, that there is but one, only one substance underlying all forms. In other words, mind and matter are mental and physical and ingredients of one single system. This is not the product of my imagination, but the result of scientific investigation along well-known and proved lines. The idea that mental and physical or mind and matter are different fundamentally is no longer accepted by those who understand the materializing power of thought. Certain types of metaphysics try to deny matter in an effort to eliminate disease. But this has failed miserably. We must realize that it is not denial nor affirmations that heal, but understanding that our thoughts and emotions outpicture themselves in form. Why? Because we are the creator of these things. And once we recognize the relative, we will see that which is real, which is behind it. This knowledge gives us power to use the external things without fear of destructive reactions. But all the time you live in the relative and you do not know what it is, you are in fear of what may happen. Therefore you have destructive reactions that enter the mind and by doing so enter the body. The next series of lectures I want to go into the occupational therapy in its deepest spiritual and mental side as well as physical, so as to help you to make a real success of your life and your work and play, so that you'll no longer be confused in your minds regarding your daily activities. Those who have even a limited intelligence can comprehend and can easily pursue this wonderful and extraordinary science. We'll become acquainted with those scientific minds who are leaders in thought not only in our world today, but those great minds of the past who gave to the world knowledge that could not be accepted because the world was not ready for it. Because the world was living in its own illusion of reality that existed around them, but was an illusion of their reality. And still it is today that people will say what you see and feel is real. But you will know what I am telling you is the truth. And what you see is not the real. The real is the abstract out of which these things you see before you. As Paul said, things are not made out of things that are seen, but out of that which is unseen. So James Jeans says, to say that mind cannot influence matter now becomes as absurd as to say that the mind cannot influence ideas. Matter must have the same general nature as an idea, because matter must be an idea. What can it be but an idea? It's the relative. Matter outside our minds produces ideas inside our minds. Causes must be of like nature to their effects. Therefore, if we live in the relative will cause these ideas to be created in your own mind and set up a train of thought that will picture itself in you or your circumstances or in you. What I am trying to show you now is something greater than you have ever seen before. Something so magnificent that when you realize the truth of it, it will lift you out of the relative into something that is beyond. Yet you will know the relative of what it is. You students are now coming forward, beginning to understand my word. And as you go on deeper and deeper into this study, so you will know more and more and understand then what fear means and how it comes about. We have seen this plainly enough through emotional habit patterns, how they talk back to our minds, showing that the cause must be of like nature to the effect. I'll now go to the Bible and read from Romans 12:2, Moffat translation. Instead of being molded to this world, the relative, have your mind renewed and so transformed in nature, able to make out what the will of God is, namely what is good and acceptable to Him and perfect. Here we are told not to allow ourselves to be affected by the external world through ideas created in reaction to the external world, but to transform the nature of our external circumstances in accordance with our own understanding of the power of our thought that is generated from the power of the consciousness that is alone the consciousness of God established in man. As the creative power in God, so it is the creative power in man. That is reality. Anything you can discern external to yourself is relative. But you will find there is something that is not relative. Although you do not know what it is, you will know that it is. And you will know it is the creator of the relative. But the one and the other are not separated. There can be no separation in the infinite mind. It has been your experience and mine that we create ideas in response to outside conditions, with the result that we create fear and limitation which are pictured in accordance with the effects we see, not realizing that these effects have like causes. We see how important it is for us to discern what our ideas really are. The objective world is directed by the unseen power of our own consciousness. What a truth this is. This last sentence covers the great and mighty truth Jesus saw when he said, I am myself, I'm nothing, it's the Spirit of the Father within me that do these things. The objective world is directed by the unseen power of our own consciousness, which is the consciousness of God established in man. It's the Spirit of the Father within me. The thought produced in the universal mind and the thought produced in man's mind only differ in the degree as a drop is to the ocean. The action is the same. While the universal mind produces a world or a man in material form, so does man produce his own conditions in the same substance. By our experience, day by day, we find the truth of this law which is inherent within us all. We ourselves, sometimes caught up in our own creations and our fears and our ideas, like a dream, like a nightmare. Yes, you're caught up in your own nightmares, as a person is caught up in the nightmare as they sleep. It is very often brought about by a condition of the stomach, or a fear of any kind. The mind creates thoughts and runs along creating one thing after another, building up more and more, until you find that this is all an illusion. You lie on your pillow at night. There may be a little feather that is pressing through the pillow. The stalk of the feather begins to prick your cheek. You pass into a dream, and you feel that the devil is down on top of you, pressing a fork through your cheek. You see his tail and his mouth and everything, and you see the spear and all. The whole mind has created it, for the whole thing is but an illusion. But nevertheless, you wake up dripping with sweat, because really you saw the devil. And you're living in your own nightmares while you are awake, if you only knew it, because you have not discerned the relative or understanding. This proves that present external action has the effect of stimulating the mind. We have in our brain cells that have been so affected by habit that they create inhibitions. I will call them then the don't-do cells. They belong to the habit we have ourselves created by our reaction to the external world, to the right. If we could only pray like Jesus prayed there on that mountain, we could be transformed now, because we realize reality as he realized. The relative did not exist to him. Time did not exist to him. Space did not exist to him. He only knew that God and he were one. We have also these yes-do cells, which are responding to the understanding of the life within. And it is these cells we have to encourage, so that we can manifest and produce for ourselves health and mental vigor. Because our health and mental vigor come from within, anything that is soothing will help these don't-do cells to work until the don't-do cells change to yes-do cells. Then we are free. We will see this, that the more we understand the relative, the more we realize the life that is within, we encourage those don't-do cells to become yes-do. Inhibitions then are created by habit. I said anything that is soothing, and I mean soothing. When a person is jittery, jittery music will help to keep them jittery. That is why many people are living on their nerves. Why are they doing it? So they turn on the radio and this jazz is going on all the time, tapping their feet, jumping like this, shaking themselves about like this. Jittery, what's happening? The whole body is becoming useless because of the fact energy is being used up in a lot of stupid nonsense. But the night time comes, however, when the strain of this sort of business is too great and the nerves snap and a breakdown is evident. The very thing that caused the snap will then irritate. This is the general experience. The opposite to irritation is soothing, and this is the aid I recommend which works wonders. Nevertheless, it's a relative. If that soothing of the nerves on the outside can break down those irritations that are taking place inside, you have begun to get the relief you require. cause is soothing, talks back. If you have an irritation at the outside, it will talk back to the mind and increase that irritation. If you have a soothing done on the outside, it will talk back to the mind, it will help to soothe that irritation. The question is, how can one be soothed externally? There are many ways, such as lying on the beach listening to the waves, by gentle sunbathing, by massage, gentle stroking. The cat purrs with its stroke. The dog lies at your feet, will come up for more and more stroking and further patting. What I am saying now may seem childish, but nevertheless it is very satisfactory in cases of nerve strain through emotional habit patterns. Because these habit patterns are talking back. If then we can realize that habit patterns are talking back, the soothing will talk back also. Stroking of the spine is one of the finest things for soothing the nerves. It brings into operation the yes-do cells. Joel's story says, you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. Try stroking tonight and see what happens. See how it soothes. On either side of the spine, as I've explained in the previous lesson, there is a ganglion mass of sympathetic nerves that is connected with the cerebrospinal nerves, and stroking sets up reactions in the brain and sympathetic nerves at one and the same time. That is to say, that the sympathetic nerves are right through the body, and where the trouble is or the irritation is, stroking soothes that irritation. At the same time, there is a reaction back to the brain, because every touch of the skin, touch of the flesh, will send a reaction back to the skin by a reflex. These reflexes then are brought back again to the body in the form of the same kind as you send back to the brain. Soothing. It may seem simple and childish, but I say to you, it is the most scientific thing you have ever heard of in your life. It's like homeopathy. It assists nature instead of interfering with nature. So we set up the connection between the cerebrospinal nerves and the stroking sets up a reaction in the brain and the sympathetic nerves at one and the same time. This has the effect of unifying those two systems so that they will create the desired effect in mind, brain, and body. When you are stroked gently on your back, you've forgotten about your trouble. It no longer worries you. You feel the sensation of that soothing effect. It passes into your nervous system, to your brain. The longer you lie there, the more will you have changed those don't-do cells into yes-do cells. Do you think that when you come to me, then I work on your spine and then stroke your back gently, that I'm just stroking it for fun? I wouldn't waste my time stroking it for fun. But I know what it does for you. And when you lie then down again on your back, what happens to you? You pass off into a beautiful state of semi-sleep. Is that not so? For every portion of your whole body is relaxed. Why, I could write a medical course right from the very beginning of the anatomy, the nervous system, and the function of the organs of the body from an entirely new light altogether, as you read in the ordinary books of today. And I've had 40 years experience, mind you, and there's very little that I haven't seen. I've seen most of all the troubles in the world. And the most of the troubles that I get are those who are incurable, but 90% of them become cured. I was talking to a man today who came to see me. He's in charge of a department which has got to do with people who are sick and so forth. And he has several doctors to deal with. And quite a number of these people have come to me and I've put them right. They have no success at all under medical treatment. And some of the doctors were saying, oh, well, so forth, trying to make excuses. But there was one doctor, this man said, was a great advocate for me. He said, listen, you must take off your hat to that man. When he can do things in 5 minutes that has taken you 20 years to do and you haven't completed them yet. I said to myself, I myself am nothing. It's the spirit, the intelligence that guides me what to do. Surely then, you see what I'm telling you is reasonable and true. This exercise could be done by anyone with common sense. It tones up the blood vessels and improves the circulation of the blood, the nerve energy, relaxes the tense muscles, stimulates the glands and skin, and helps to rid the body of waste product. It has the added effect of bringing into play the yes-do cells. Music is also a great source of regaining health and nerve regeneration. Music should be of the soothing type with a tang of inspiration here and there. The method to be adopted should be that the body should be first be relaxed and, as previously explained, sit back in your lounge chair, take all the strain off your mind and body and let the music flow over you and through you. Feel the rhythm in your mind and body, not in a tense way, but with the same feeling that the waves of the sea gives you as you listen to them breaking on the shore. It has been definitely found that people work better when music is played. Production has increased by leaps and bounds. By this method, the workers are not tired at the end of the day. I remember during the First World War when we had to do a forced march of 20 miles. We were relieved, left the trenches, and we went back into our rest place. No sooner we got there, we got word that we had to go back again because the trenches had been retaken. An Irish regiment went in there. I remember as we were going up, they say, Jock, he says, don't go up there, killing each other up there. And they were on the way down. We had to go up and take the trenches back. Now the men were dog-tired and lagged behind when the pipes did not play, when the bagpipes did not play the lag behind. So divided the band into two, pipes played all the time. Every man reached the destination comparative fresh and went into action straight away. A song with a swing will carry you along the road. There are hundreds of ways that music and singing will change these don't-do cells into yet-do cells. All these things I'm telling you are simple, but they are real. Play your favorite records, or play a musical instrument. Bagpipes afford the squat good pleasure when they are played well. How you will strain your ear to the skirl of the pipes in the distance. How it makes your blood circulate and stimulate your nerves. Those who have been in Scotland among the Highland hills and heard the skirl of the pipes in the evening as the sun goes down, the purple hue of the heather mirrored in the sky, sound of the pibroch wafting on the gentle breeze. Even if you have not got a drop of Scottish blood in your veins, it will enrapture you beyond description. Yes, and a wee drappy of the Highland Jew will add fire to your soul. Yes, but it's true. My mother was a teetotaler. She would not even put one drop of brandy in her mouth from her youth until she was dead. I tell you, when I remember her when she was very sick, I said to her, "Mother, have a wee drop of this scotch, have a wee drop of whiskey. It will do you a lot of good." "No, no, my boy, I'll never put that near my mouth, never in your life." I says, "Mother, if you only take a wee drappy of it, it will make you better." But she wouldn't even budge. And I knew this, that you could have lived longer if she had taken a wee drappy occasionally. Making me laugh, but it's true. I can remember when my brother had been in Glasgow, and at that time there were smallpox going about in Glasgow, and he caught it, and he came home. And we didn't know what it was. He became sick at home. We sent for the doc 27 miles away. He came 27 miles in a trap. And he looked at him, and he looked one or two spots, and he said, "I think he'll be all right. Oh, there's nothing wrong with him." He went way back. But in 2 or 3 days he was covered, and he was raving. And I was sleeping in the same room with him. So we sent for the doctor again, and when the doctor saw him, "My God," he says, "smallpox, smallpox, smallpox." So we had to get him away into a sanatorium about 30 or 40 miles away. My father said to me, "Look here, my boy, we will not get that smallpox. We'll drink whiskey." Yes, and we drank whiskey morning, noon, and night. And we never got even a touch of the smallpox. And in fact, the doctor was coming around and looking at us to see if there were any spots around us. There was only whiskey spots, there were no. There was no other. Yes, it's good medicine, taken reasonably, when we recognize it and know what it can do. And you notice how Scotch I am when I talk about the whiskey? It's in my healing blood, you see. Aye, well, we've got to have a little laugh occasionally, otherwise it's too tense. The reason
You often wonder why I make you smile and laugh. Well, it's good for you. You're all tensed up for a moment, listening in tenseness. Then I break the tenseness and you feel fresh, don't you? You're now ready to go on for some more. You could go on all night doing that. That is the art of keeping people happy while talking. Now we come to relaxation of the vocal organs. This exercise is of great value in producing a pleasant sounding voice. Relax the body as previously explained. A high-pitched voice is a sign of nervous tension. When the voice is shrill, it should be lowered a pitch or two. Practice will soon bring it down to a pleasant tone. To open the throat, sound the word ha, H-A, ha. You will notice how that opens the throat, ha. Ha, slowly and easily. Then speak as softly as possible, listening to the voice, at the same time relax the lower jaw. If your lower jaw is tight, then it will not move. You speak when your lower jaw is slack and relaxed. Oh, speak nicely and smoothly. You listen to your voice, listen to the tone and the timbre in it. Hear the various tones in it. All the tones should be in the voice. It should rise and fall according to the emotion, according to the emphasis you want to put on a particular word or sentence. You use the cadences, which are 11 or 12, that is, various grades or tones in the voice. And you learn then to modulate, to raise your voice, to lower your voice, but you always have the timbre in it, that sort of tone. And the word tone is a thing that gives you tone. Tone. You notice when you say tone, you close the mouth and the sound is still in the head. Tone. Tone. Voice personality is of great importance to everyone. You know the story or the saying, whenever she opened her mouth, she put her foot in it. Nice face, beautiful clothes, wonderful figure, but the voice puts them all together as one beautiful thing. If the voice is missing, then it is not so good. So as you open and shut your mouth by letting your jaw drop each time you open your mouth, this relaxes the tongue at the root, down here. And if you do that, you can feel your tongue relaxing at the root. Purse up your lips, then let them go back to the original position. This has the effect of bringing the muscles of the mouth into play, so that when you speak, you move your lips easily. Words are formed by the tongue and the lips, remember. Keep repeating the sound, oi, oi, oi. Now watch what I'm doing. While keeping the mouth and throat easy, you'll notice that when you say E, most people say E, the mouth and throat closes up. How should you say E? You should say E, E. E. Just easy as you say R. I. I. Then you have ease in your thoughts. You don't hold and constrict your muscles of your throat and your tongue when you say E. These things may be simple, but I'm telling you this. For the benefit of your health and your well-being, it is just as well you should know them because they are scientific in nature. So keep the IE while keeping the mouth and the throat easy. You will notice that when you say E, that the mouth and throat closes up. Try and say E with the mouth and tongue in the same position as you say O, O, E, O, E, O, E. Repeat the words peace, pleasant, calm, ease. Feel what effects these words have on you. Teachers should have a pleasant voice. A shrill voice will tire children quicker than anything else. A rasping voice in a classroom is nerve-wracking to the students, while a pleasant voice makes them happy. The students may not know why one teacher makes them irritable and another makes them happy, but it is the voice that does it. A rasping file will send shivers down your back and put your teeth on edge. The same happens when the voice is rasping. One who wishes can improve the voice by these simple methods. The 10th lesson will be a summary of the whole course, so that at a glance you will see what is required. Do not be in too great a hurry. Take your exercises easy and do them well. It takes time before you can get complete and perfect relaxation. When you have acquired this, then you will find that you are in perfect health. The one who can relax perfectly anywhere, at any time, relaxed both mentally and physically, has gained the hallmark of perfect happiness. And that is true. Relaxed at your work, relaxed at your play. While I'm standing here, my legs are relaxed, my body is relaxed. I feel ease. I feel comfortable. My hands move quietly. It is just the simple thing. Relax, relax. In Corinthians 2:12 we read, now we have received the Spirit, not the Spirit of the world, but the Spirit that comes from God, that we may understand what God bestows upon us. The power, the way, the means to relax your whole body and mind. In that way, nature comes forward and makes you perfect. It is in relaxed state that life functions perfectly through the body. When you are tensed, then life does not function perfectly. It waits until you give it an opportunity to relax, relax, relax. If we allow fear, anxiety, failure, and limitation to enter into our consciousness from outside, we will lose that true understanding of what God has bestowed upon us. We'll become tensed, irritated, fearful. Our existence in the material world is the outpicturing of the spirit, the inner into the outer. Spirit, soul, and body, they are really one, just as steam, water, and ice are related to each other so is spirit, soul, and body. Therefore, to think of ourselves, we must not separate spirit, soul, and body, but rather hold them as one if we would be strong. So shall we produce that which the multitude calls miracles. This is the temple of the living God. Oh, that I could completely and absolutely, consciously fulfill that which is now a reality. I should be free of everything. I know the difficulties that you know also. I've passed through them all. I've passed through most difficulties in this world. And I know what the mind does. And I know where the comfort lies. Benediction, O infinite splendor, thy call has come to me to awaken myself in my sleeping mind. I hear thee whisper to me, where I am, behold, thou art there also. Since then thy whisper has been constantly working through my soul and body. And now I'm working with thee through living eternity. O mighty one, I am thy trumpet, so all may hear thy voice and awaken unto their true inheritance. When my earthly voice can whisper no more, I will still whisper through thee, so that thy voice will be heard in every soul. O infinite splendor. This tune is the sanctuary of the silent hills.